gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant. When I'm a road.
Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, on another beautiful day here in Central Florida. This is why we live here, right, folks? All right, and this is why you tune in here, because it is now time for the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show, as we come to you once again live as we can be on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. And I'm not alone in the studio tonight, thank goodness. I got with me the commanding general of the American Adversaries Army, and our military expert and foreign policy go-to guy, and that would be, of course, Colonel Danny McKnight. Colonel, once again, thanks for being on the show and being a part of the American Adversaries.
Always happy to be here, Chris.
And I am Christopher Hart, and Nick LeCicero is on the bridge, and 407-774-8255 is the number, and the Colonel will be with us all night long tonight. And boy, do we ever have a lot to talk about, you know, with this thing going on over there in Brussels. And, you know, it's like one of those movies coming to a theater near you soon, right? Unfortunately, we'll be talking about that here in just a second. But don't forget, folks, and we're really harping on this because we want some one of you out there to win $4,000. And there's a couple of ways you can go about doing that. You can go to AM660TheAnswer.com, and down and there you can register for the tax day bonus sweepstakes, and or you can have already, if you haven't already, please do download the free WORLFMAM app. Just go to your app store if you have a smart device and download that doggone thing, or if you need some help like McBath and I usually do, get somebody who knows more about it than you do and get them to download it for you and show you how to go in there every day so you can participate in our daily polls and register for that sweet sweep stakes. All right? So I want somebody out there to win that $4,000. And the best part is, and Nick tells me, you can register once a day, but every day between now and April the 15th. So please get in on that. Right, Nick?
That is correct, Chris. Yeah, we could, once per day, you could get in there and, use your account to sign into the contest. And that's, you can't do it once on the app and once online. It's all connected. So, just once per person per day.
Yeah, we saw what you did and we know who you are. So what's today's poll question?
All right, today's poll question, I'm tying in the American Adversaries wrestling analogy here a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you agree with the jury's award of $25 million in damages above the $115 million already awarded to Hulk Hogan in his recent lawsuit against Gawker Media?
All right, so what do we have for results so far?
Right now we're at 100% no. No more money for Hulk Hogan.
$115 million should be enough to take care of it, huh?
Yeah.
All right, well, the good news is he got all that in the settlement. The bad news is he may not ever see any of it, right?
Well, that's how that goes, right?
Anyway, I think Gawker probably think twice about wrestling with any wrestlers like the Hulkster, right, brother? All right.
That's pretty good.
Thanks. Yeah. He and I, you know, we used to mix it up together, but
that might be better than your Clinton.
Oh, come on now. I can't do Clinton anymore because he sounds so much like an old man. All right, let's get serious though for a few minutes.
Does Danny have any impressions?
Yeah, most of them are bad.
All right, but please get in on the poll today, and don't forget to register for that drawing as well. And once again, we'll give you the final poll tally before we go off the air tonight. Okay. And don't forget, when we go off the air, you got Hugh Hewitt's going to come on, and he's going to take you live, and then you'll have some live election night coverage because there are a couple of elections going on today. Actually, three or four. There is Arizona primary. That's a winner-take-all state. Then you got Utah, which is winner-take-all state if somebody gets 50% or more. And then you got Idaho, which is just the Democrats. And then there's another set of the islands out there in the Pacific that are going to be holding a caucus, too. So Hugh will be able to bring you some results there. And, of course, we'll talk about that tomorrow night. But more importantly tonight, of course, is what happened in Brussels. This was an attack that was carried out in the airport and the subway station over there. And make no mistake about it, even though this attack was physically carried out in Brussels, it was also an attack on the United States of America. And I say that because it was the bomb was set off right where there's an American Airlines check-in desk, and there's evidently a Starbucks right there, and this was a flight that was preparing to load to guess what? Fly, guess where they were going to fly from Belgium to the United States. So in my opinion, anyway, the attackers were trying to get to as many Americans as well as just general citizens as they could kill. There are more than 30 dead, at least 31 we know now, and 200 plus injured. The bombs evidently contained shrapnel in the form of nails. Don't ask me what penny they used, but they used nails, and of course that maximizes the damage. Colonel, your initial reaction?
Shameful, sorry for what happened, but not shocked. Not shocked at all. This is going to continue to happen until we put our big boy pants on and start making a difference. And dropping bombs in Syria is not how we're going to make the difference. It helps, but it's not the solution. These guys aren't going to stay in Syria and get bombed all day long,
right,
ISIS.
Right.
And we always hear about, well, we took out a building and we killed so-and-so. Well, I want to know who went in there and checked out that body to make sure who that was that they dropped a bomb on.
Right.
And so this is going to continue to happen. And you're exactly right. I'm glad you pointed it out, because I surely would have. There was a family of six, okay, and they're dead. They're dead, you know. And I believe I saw all of this so fast today, I think the last count was 31 that had died. And I believe that family, that there was a family of six, and the father is a service member. Isn't that shocking? You think he wasn't targeted in one way or the other? Sure he was.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The last call number I heard, though, was of the Americans, I believe it was 9. I think that
were
is
killed.
The correct. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah,
and his family
more
was
injured.
One of them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And many more may die because of, you know, we don't know what kind of medical care they were able to get quick enough to some of them, and so we may even lose more. But this is not shocking. I mean, Paris was not that long ago, and now we're in Belgium. Well, they're going to keep moving around. And, yes, they flew their flag afterwards, didn't they? Yes,
oh,
they
yeah.
did.
Yeah, ISIS has already claimed responsibility.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, we think we're defeating ISIS. We're not defeating ISIS. They're so similar to other things that we have seen. They're very patient.
Oh,
if
yeah.
we beat them up a little bit, they just
yeah.
hold on.
Right.
They hold on, and then they do something, and they did it today. And I believe that this will continue to happen until we do the right thing and we attack instead of just doing this bombing thing. I've said it for a long time. I know, you know, a lot of people don't agree with it and don't really care if they do or not. But until we go eyeball to eyeball with these bad guys, we're not going to eliminate them. You're not going to eliminate them by bombing, because you're going to get some, but how many do you get?
Right.
And, you know, they talk about the bombing. Well, we take away a lot of their assets, too. Well, you didn't take away the nails, did you?
Right.
See, that's what they're wanting to say. They take away the assets. They don't have as much money now because we destroyed this, you know, and it had money in it. Okay.
Right, right.
What about the things that they do have that they can make bombs with and they can kill American citizens like happened today? That's what's unacceptable to me.
It seems as though they're trying to solve this problem. They're trying to win. What we now know, more and more people are recognizing this as a war. As a matter of fact, the Belgian foreign minister, no, I'm sorry, the French foreign minister said today, we are at war. I've been saying this is World War III since 9/11.
Yeah.
And I don't mean Benghazi 9/11. I mean 9/11 2001. Right. And yet we've been trying to do this with half measures pretty much all the way, haven't we?
Well, you know, yeah, since 9/11 happened, what did we do? Well, we did make a big difference in Iraq. That's going by the wayside now.
Right.
Because our president let it go, President Obama.
Right.
And then we go to Afghanistan, and we made a tremendous difference over there. And I know that from being there. I physically have been there twice.
Right.
So I know that we did. But we now have backed off on our forces to we're under 10,000 there. And so that is the Taliban has got re-energized, haven't they?
Right.
They have.
Right.
And that's because they know there's less than 10,000 Americans here.
Right.
There's others here, but there's less than 10,000 Americans, and that's the ones we fear. So we're okay because they don't have – we have made great progress and then let it go. And
right.
That's exactly what's happened there, and that's exactly what ISIS is doing. They're just waiting, and they just pick their times. And they're not going away anytime soon until we take them away. And I mean take them away. If it's 1 by 1 or 10 by 10, it doesn't matter. We've got to take care of them eyeball to eyeball, and that's just what I think.
And, of course, we haven't had the political will to do that so far.
No.
And hopefully we'll be electing someone who will have the political will to do that. It is still a developing situation over there. I'm sure that the numbers are going to reflect that in terms of the dead and injured. Evidently, this may have been tied to the guy that they just captured a day or two before, the Salah guy, whatever his name is.
Mm-hmm.
And evidently, the Belgian authorities let it be known that the guy was talking, and that may have set this all in motion. But as you said, it wasn't a matter of if, it was simply a matter of when,
mm-hmm.
right? And they may have moved their schedule up a little bit, but obviously they were already planning and prepared.
They were prepared
to
do this. That's right.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show with Colonel Danny McKnight. So please stay with us. There you go, Dancing Queen. That's our little ode to President Obama, who's chilling out, so to speak, down in Cuba tonight. We'll talk about that a little bit more here in a minute. But the colonel was just talking about how we don't have any leadership with the will to take on this problem. Of course, this president won't even clearly identify the problem that is being Islamic, Islamic-driven terrorism and, fundamentalism. And when you won't even identify the enemy, it makes it a little bit harder to sell the public on dealing with the enemy, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we haven't. He has yet to really admit, like you just said, that is what we have going on, and he has yet to really commit to that. And then when I hear today, the Secretary of Defense, which I remember the day that he was announced, and I was doing another radio show on one of those other stations, okay?
Oh, Ash.
Yeah. And they asked me that day, and we looked at it again last night, Linda and I did, because she videoed it. And the things that I said have come very, very true. He had no clue about how to be the Secretary of Defense because he had no background in terms of defense. He was a bean counter.
A pencil pusher,
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And if you look at everything he has done, especially in our military, in making decisions to make equality exist, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, women on
exactly.
the front lines and all that. Yeah.
And he's put
combat
a lot of
units.
People in great jeopardy because of that.
Yeah.
And then to hear him talking, and what was his focus today? He was talking about the budget, okay? Like I said, that is what he is a Secretary of Defense. He is a budget-focused guy, and I want a Secretary of Defense that understands the military, understand what it means to take the fight, and make the fight and win, and we're not seeing that at all.
Is there someone you have in mind that you think would make a really good Secretary of Defense?
I'm available.
And I think you would make a good one. That's for sure.
No, I'm just kidding to say that.
But it probably should be at this particular time in history anyway, a person with a great deal of actual military experience.
I agree. I you know, people will say, well, you say that because you were in the military. Yeah, I do a little bit. But what you've said is this time right now in our history, this is a very critical time. If we don't have the right people in the right places doing the right things, we're in trouble. And the people that are in trouble, and you've heard me say it so many times, are my grandkids. That's what I worry about, because those that are 2 and 4, 5 and 6, they have no say right now.
Right.
But 20 years from now, it's going to be them having to deal with it because we haven't dealt with it.
Yeah.
So we do need, in my opinion, and I am thrilled with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs we've got, the Marine Dunford. He's fabulous.
Yeah. Right.
And he does speak his piece.
He has, yes.
The problem is, you know, he's one.
He's alone.
If you can't get the Secretary of the Defense and the Secretary of the Army and the Marines and all of that on board to support the chairman, nothing's happening. And most of those people I just named are all people that wear a coat and tie. They don't wear a uniform.
Right.
And look at the Secretary of the Army we've got now. He don't even know where you would put a boot on at, okay?
Or much less how to tie it when he got it on, right?
Exactly.
So, obviously, you know, this election is big. A lot of people have been focusing recently on the Supreme Court nominees because Scalia died. I mean, and of course, that captured a lot of the news. But really, we need to be focusing on Commander-in-Chief a whole lot, too, don't we?
Absolutely. And what we're dealing with, looking at that, the possibilities of who could be the next commander in chief.
Right.
We could be in trouble.
Yeah, well, the five that are left, none of them have any military experience. And that's a little bit unsettling right there.
Well, yes, it is. But, you know, what I always say about that is you may not have everything in terms of experience that maybe some of us would want you to have. But do you surround yourself with good people and the right people that do have the experience, and you'd be smart enough to listen to them?
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Well, I promise you, if Hillary Clinton was to become president, she ain't going to listen to anybody. She hasn't listened to anybody yet, okay?
Right.
And so why would she even think to do that?
Right.
Okay?
Exactly.
And you can go on from there. But that's what I want, is somebody that's going to understand. It's not all about me. I might be the president. I might be the commander-in-chief. But who am I going to surround myself with so that the right things happen? And I think that's very important. And so the best commander-in-chief will be the one that's got the best people around them that know what they're doing. We don't have that today. We don't.
Well, there is one guy in this thing who touts himself as being the person who does surround himself with capable people. And, of course, you know who I'm talking
about.
Exactly
right.
Donald.
Now, he admits it. He says, yeah, I will surround myself. He said,
are you confident that he would?
I think so, because if you look at the way he has done business-wise.
Right.
Yeah, he's the boss and everything, but he's got so many smart people out there that he lets them take care of the business. He has the final say. That's what he's supposed to have, is the final say. But he's not supposed to be dictating everything, because if you have to dictate everything, you're not a very good leader, you know?
And he has made it clear in the debates and interviews that I've seen that he will rely on, he will find what he calls the Patton, the MacArthur, in other words, a capable, smart military man person. And then basically it will be them that tells him what needs to be done.
And that's the way it should be, because hopefully he does understand he doesn't have that background. He doesn't have that experience. But I believe that if you had Hillary Clinton in there, she would think she knows everything, because
right.
that's what she constantly acts like.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Look, when she was Secretary of State, she didn't ask for anybody to give her any guidance.
Right.
And that's what happens in Benghazi.
Right.
It's because she didn't know.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to take a break. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show, and we'll be right back with more with Colonel Danny McKnight. 407-774-8255 is the number if you'd like to be a part of the show. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks, and thanks so much for being out there. 407-774-8255 is the number. Colonel Danny McKnight is in the studio with me right now, and the Colonel has written an excellent book. It's called Streets of Mogadishu. You can get a copy, and he'll autograph it for you. And all you have to do is go to DannyMcKnight.com. That's DannyMcKnight.com. And the book is about... It's sort of two parts, if you will. One part is about leadership and the 12 qualities of leadership. It is 12, isn't it? The 12 qualities of leadership, respect, and...
I don't even hardly know the number because I do it so much, but 12 is about right, I can tell you that.
And then the other part of the book is about the Mogadishu mission over there in Somalia. And, you know, we were fighting these same guys back then, right?
Yeah, we were.
I mean, you were. I can't say we. Figuratively speaking, yeah. You literally were over there. That crew and Osama bin Laden learned and took
supported it.
Yeah.
He supported them. Yes, he did.
Yeah. And we had the same situation back then where we had the military who knew how to take care of business, so to speak. We already had the assets. We had the teams. You were with the Ranger Battalion, which had all of the assets that you would need when you would be deployed, correct?
Correct. When we were going to deploy the first time, yes.
You're right. But the civilian leadership decided that they didn't want to go with full measures. They wanted to go with half measures. And, of course, half measures resulted in Black Hawk Down, which, as bad as it was, and you know literally because you were there, it was still a successful mission.
Yeah, we did what we were supposed to that day. And people fail sometimes to really realize that. They talk about how awful that was and everything. I said, yeah, but we accomplished exactly what we set out to do that day, capture two key people. Capture a total of 21.
And killed a whole lot of bad guys.
Killed a lot of bad guys.
Now, you took some casualties in the process, lost some assets, but that's what happens in war. And then you guys were ready to go about it and finish off the business that you had started, and lo and behold, the order comes to go home.
Yep. Stand down. Boy, that sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It sure does.
No, I never said stand down. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But, see, the other thing that I think so significant in terms of why I chose to write it was we were prepared to go on August the 22nd. And most people don't know on August the 22nd the mission got canceled.
Right. And that's when
and
you were ready to go.
My forces went back to Fort Bliss because we were there for a training. We had been there about 10 days when we got alerted to the mission. And we'd been there a total of 10 hours when we're told now the mission's back on again. So, you know, it makes you real leery of the leadership when you got a mission, your real plans. Your General Garrison had us trained to the T August 22nd. He's told the mission's off. We go back. Delta and the aviators are still at Bragg because Delta lives there, of course. And then we go back and join them when the mission's put back on. But they had two wonderful decisions waiting on us, which were absolutely critical in terms of their impact, especially on October 3rd. The first one was... Task Force Ranger that has 550 people trained, ready to go, to do the mission, can now only take 450. Now, who was a brilliant person that came up with the idea to cut back 100? Well, they said the reason they did it, they didn't want it to look like a buildup similar to Vietnam. Well, the first thing is if President Clinton even said anything associated with Vietnam, that was disrespectful to everyone that fought in Vietnam because he was a draft dodger. He had to get a pardon by the Arkansas governor to get out of the reserves.
Right.
And, of course, we've seen him and Hillary standing by the burning American flag. So why would he even relate to that? And if people said, well, maybe it wasn't his decision, excuse me, he's called the commander-in-chief for a reason. He probably didn't have a clue and somebody told him to do that.
He signed the paper.
Yes, exactly. So that was a biggie. Do you think I had 45 of mine that didn't go. Do you think those 45 could have had a great impact on October the 3rd in saving lives, saving that second helicopter from being overrun? You bet. But you know, there's something else we always like to have. It's called the AC-130 gunship. It was part of the plan. It was trained to go with us. And they said, no, they're not. You can't take it with you because they're worried about collateral damage. Well, you know what? If you can't accept collateral damage, you should never put an American in combat.
That's the bottom line.
And that AC-130 would have taken care of the second aircraft, they would have never touched any of those guys.
Now, is that the one that they nicknamed Puff the Magic Dragon?
Yeah, that's what they used to always call it. Yeah, that same thing. AC-130
has... It's loaded with big old 50 caliber Gatling guns.
Well, it has two, as I call it, two important pieces of ammunition. Real big one and a real little one.
Okay.
And really, we only need the little ones, which aren't little, really.
Right.
And they're the ones that shoot out of the side as they come around, you know.
Yeah.
And they're amazing. They're great.
And but they can really pinpoint the fire.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're right on.
Yeah.
Okay. But they didn't let us have that. I think either one of those decisions, had they been different, I believe my friends that were taken and killed from that second crash site would have never happened. And therefore, I haven't forgiven, nor will I ever forgive for that.
And, of course, a C-130 would have made a big difference in Benghazi, too.
Oh, if they'd had the AC, there would have been no problem. Easy.
And these are still deployed, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, they're still used. You bet they are. Uh-huh.
Well, they're still being flown, evidently not being used.
Yeah. But oh, yes.
Unfortunately.
They're still part of the inventory, definitely.
Right.
And they've made them a little better. I mean, we always do that technologically, but they're still the basic thing. And I know at Benghazi, if they could have gotten one there, too. And they could have. Believe me, they could have.
Oh, yeah.
They just weren't allowed, but they could have. Would that have saved those guys? Oh, boy, would it have saved those guys.
And these things can fly over 500 miles an hour.
Yeah.
They're subsonic, but they can really scoot along.
Yeah.
And so you can't tell me that they couldn't have been there in 13 hours or less, for instance.
Easy. Right? Easy.
And, of course, you guys should have had that asset, and then it would have made a huge difference. And then we're seeing a similar situation going on to bring it up to date to now.
Yes.
And as you said, the bombing, and especially these surgical bombings, or the pinpoint bombings or whatever, you know, if you really wanted bombing to make the difference, you really would have to, as Cruz said, turn the whole area into glass. In other words, you'd have to kill a lot of innocent people, destroy pretty much everything in the process. That's how you could do it from the air.
Right.
Right? Not barring wanting to do that, then, of course, you have to have some ground assets in there. And that's what we're doing, grudgingly, reluctantly, but we are doing it. Now, so far, they've gone in as advisors.
Correct.
But the military has announced, the U.S. has, this is in today's Orlando Sentinel, the U.S. has set up a small Marine artillery outpost in northern Iraq to protect a nearby Iraqi military base where U.S. advisors are helping Iraqi combat troops plan and prepare for a counteroffensive in Mosul. It's a fire base, Colonel Steve Warren, spokesman for the U.S. military headquarters in Baghdad, said at the Pentagon. A fire base. In other words, that's there to protect our advisors who are training the people who are supposed to be protecting the Iraqis.
So we're not attacking the bad guys. We're training them so that they can go attack the bad guys.
Right.
And we're going to protect our people while they're there. But see, what's going to happen is when they go out to we get the Iraqis trained to go do what they're supposed to do, we're going to be going with them still as advisors, okay?
Right.
And if you remember not too long ago, the master sergeant that was killed when they went in with the Kurds, because the Kurds were going to do that mission to get those people out, and the Kurds got scared real quick when people started shooting at them, and who ended up really getting the people out? Our people did.
Right.
And so they can say they're advisors, but thank goodness they're letting them carry guns at least, you know?
With ammunition,
yes,
evidently.
Exactly. So that what's going on over there in terms of these advisors, you know, I said it a long time ago on Neil Cavuto's show, we got to put boots on the ground. It's not something I think is a great thing to do, and I'm not saying it for that reason, but it's the right thing to do. I believe had we put boots on the ground a year ago, I think we would have already made a big difference over there.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, if we hadn't taken the boots off the ground to begin with in Iraq,
mm-hmm.
we would have been right there to quell this.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's the point that people never seem to remember, Chris. It was what you just said. We had 10,000 right there that were left there on purpose.
for that very reason.
Yeah. And then President Obama said, "Well, I can't work an agreement with them."
Yeah, and things are going so wonderfully well over there anyway. Yeah. This is the sign of our success that we don't need them anymore.
The success was because of us,
right? And because we still had a force there.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Because they were still there. Do you think ISIS would have been as quick to do what they started doing had we had those 10,000 sitting there? There's no way.
Do we still have troops in Germany?
Yes.
Do we still have troops in Korea?
Yes.
Do we still have troops in Japan?
Yes. And I know what the point is. The point is those places are pretty secure.
Aren't they, though?
Yeah, they are. I mean, can you imagine if we didn't have troops in South Korea, what would have already happened over there?
And let's look at it this way. Can you imagine if we had not kept troops in Japan and Germany after World War II, would they have been the democratic, you know, capitalist countries, the friends of ours that they became? Or might have they once again slid back into imperialism and fascism?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Because just think about what we did in Iraq. We left Iraq with the same rascals who had caused all the trouble to begin with. So just think if we had left Germany. Okay, we killed Hitler. He's gone. Okay, now the rest of you Nazis can have your country back. Okay, go ahead. I will leave you alone.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what we did. And same thing with Japan. Okay, all you hothead military guys, you surrendered, but now you can have your country back and do what you want with it. We'd be back in the same place with them as we are in Iraq. And because we had the foresight and, the military foresight and the political will to see those things through, the Marshall Plan and those things, which in essence was what we were doing in Iraq and Afghanistan, sort of a smaller scale, but it was the same thing, exactly. Rebuilding those societies.
That's right.
Nation building, if you want to call it that. Yeah, we did it. Didn't want to do it, but we got stuck doing it. And if you're going to do it, you can't do it half measures.
No, that's right.
Or you better not do it at all.
Well, there is no doubt in my mind that Japan is, and they're a pretty prosperous country. They're pretty good.
Pretty good friends.
And they are because of us.
Yep.
Germany, boy, they got problems, though.
They have strayed. They have really strayed here recently, especially.
Their boss, she has done some really strange things that have put Germany in jeopardy, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Well, this stuff in Belgium, this is the result of these refugees.
Yes.
And I don't know if it's the Department of Homeland Security, but the government has announced, some agency has announced that they believe that there are 50 to 100 more ISIS jihadists who are in Europe who came as part of the flow of refugees. And I'm sitting there thinking, 50 to 100? Try 500 to 1,000 maybe. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Or 500 or 5,000 to 10,000. Now, obviously, not all of them are. But one of the other things that we're finding out is the ones who aren't actually committing the acts of violence, many of them are aiding and abetting those who are.
That's right. Exactly. Yep. And that's Germany, and we know because you and I both have sat here with some people who had that background from Germany,
as we know. Yeah.
And I was so educated by listening to her and talk about it. And she is right, and she knows because that's her country, And they are going to fall if they don't change something. They will fall the way they're headed.
They're already going to have huge problems with the massive numbers of refugees that they have already let into the country. Who are now becoming, entrenched in their society. And they are not there to become good, Deutschland Germans.
No.
They are there to bring their way of life to Germany and change Germany in the process, just like they're doing in Belgium, in France, and all over Europe. They're also doing it here in Minneapolis. Where was it? St. Louis?
Oh, yeah, Minneapolis, St. Paul is awful. Exactly. Yes.
St. Paul, yeah. It's a contagion, and as you said, they're not going to sit around in Syria and wait to get bombed, right?
Right.
If we don't go in there and corral them, they're just going to spread.
And that's what we just saw today. They go outside now of Syria. They don't want to just stay there. That was just where they started. That's where they started practicing, is what I call it. They were practicing for the big show. They're now headed towards the big show. Today was another example of it. Paris was an example of it. It goes on and on, you know, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. And I'm afraid of how far we're going to let it go before we decide to make a stand.
Well, I'm afraid it's going to take a similar occurrence here in the United States again. Mm-hmm. Department of Homeland Security Chief Jay Johnson today, who has reassured us over and over again that Islam is a religion of peace and tolerance and that this has nothing to do with Islam. He has reassured us today that there are no such jihadists here in the United States. Now, how this guy knows that, I don't know. It sounds to me more like he's just trying to reassure the public than tell us the truth.
Yeah, that'd be called using the old party line, right? this is what everybody wants to hear, so this is what I'm going to say.
Okay? Right.
And that's what he's doing. He's speaking the party line, the Obama line, the Hillary line, et cetera. And it's not reality. It's so ridiculous, it makes you want to throw up when you hear him say it.
All right. We'll be right back with more of the show. Please stay with us. You are listening to The American Adversaries. And don't forget, if you have not already gotten a copy of Colonel McKnight's book, The Streets of Mogadishu, please get a copy. Make a great graduation present. You know, the graduation is coming up for high school, actually middle school, high school, college. This is a book young people, every young person should have in your life. And you need to read one, too. That's Streets of Mogadishu, DannyMcKnight.com. We'll be right back. Say that again. Go ahead, say it again.
I said it's an easy read for anybody and everybody because I wrote it. It has to be.
All right, we'll be right back.
Go to AM660TheAnswer.com for details.
Music from the Cubano there, a little Ricky Ricardo for you. Thank you there, Nick. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. We got Colonel Danny McKnight in the studio. That's Nick LoCicero on the bridge doing his magic like he always does. I'm Christopher Hart. Got a few minutes left in this hour of the show. And, you know, the president is down there in Cuba. He managed to say, and it took him less than a minute to make some comments this morning about Brussels. And I noticed it was about 10:30 before he ever, I guess he's dragging himself out of bed late down there. You're down there in Havana, you want to sleep late, right?
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, made the perfunctory remarks. In essence, I'm paraphrasing, we stand with Belgium, we'll find these perpetrators, and now let's get on to other things. At every opportunity, he just doesn't rise to the occasion, does he?
He will never really say the things that we want him to say, and that is, this has got to stop now. We want to stop it now because we don't want it spreading to other countries, especially the United States of America. Because right now, we have enough crazy people in our country that are causing enough problems. I mean, you look at how many we have lost, you know, by going in a, you know, some of the places these people and kill women and children and, you know, the things across the country. We need to solve that one.
Yeah.
But he will not step up and get very aggressive. He hadn't got aggressive about anything yet. Well, except playing golf. You know, he made pretty aggressive about that. You know, but why won't he do that? Because he will never, ever, ever take a chance on attacking somebody and making somebody uneasy. He's not going to do it.
That's not in his DNA.
Nope.
It's just not. All right, let's take a phone call before we take the break. Dave, you are up. Thank you for calling tonight.
Yeah, Colonel. Quick question. When I was back in the early 80s, remember the Red Brigade and the Bader-Meinhof gang in Germany?
Yep.
And I forget the ones in Greece, but we didn't take garbage like that. We took care of business, and we put them out of business in short order. And what this commander and loser chief that we've got now is waiting for, I haven't the bleeping faintest idea. But this is a bleeping disaster.
Well, Dave, well,
thanks
tell you
for
what,
bleeping yourself.
Well, exactly, but you get my point.
Yes, definitely.
You're,
I mean, thank
you. You're right, Dave. Yeah,
we feel your outrage, and you're right to be outraged about it. Go ahead, Colonel.
And when you talked about, you said back in 1980, right?
I was in 82 to 89.
Yeah. And who was the president of the United States in the 80s?
I probably served under Ronald Wilson Reagan.
That's correct. So what we have there is somebody that was really a leader. He was willing to make a decision, and he wasn't going to let bad things happen before he made them. He went ahead and made the decisions to keep bad things from happening. So you are exactly right.
And the problem is you go back and look at what the Biedermeierhof gang did, especially in airports. They would take machine guns and grenades and create mayhem.
They were terrorists. Exactly.
And the Red Brigade tried to go after one of our generals in Italy, and that's when the bleep hit the fan, and we just put an end to all of it. And we didn't have this drag on for, it's been seven bleeping years now.
Yeah. Well, you talk
it's
about
a whole different environment back then.
Yeah, and you mentioned a general, you know, some of them going after him and that not happening because we did the right thing.
And had he not had an armored car, because that rocket went over the top of it.
Yeah.
But
what about the two-star general that we had killed, that got killed in Afghanistan?
That's right.
You know who I'm talking about.
He didn't even go to his funeral.
And that's my point. He doesn't care, okay?
Oh, no.
We have a two-star general that does get killed, and he doesn't go because he was at Martha's Vineyard or doing whatever, but he was playing golf that day, and he didn't want to break up his golf schedule. That's the kind of leadership we have. That's not the kind of leadership we need.
And we see it today when he takes in the baseball game while all this is going on over there. That's really standing with Belgium, isn't it? Hey, Dave, thank you for the call, and thank you for serving our country and protecting us and our Constitution. God bless you so very much for that. We appreciate you being out there.
Thanks for your service, Dave.
Yep, absolutely. All right. It was a different time back then, and hopefully we can get somebody back in there that'll, be more like Reagan and less like Gumby. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. Well, we have to because this is a hard break. But when we come back, we'll have another hour with Colonel McKnight. And Mike Bass is going to sit in with us for a little while as well. So stick around. We got a whole lot more to go. And, of course, you can give us a call. And don't forget today's poll question. Was that $25 extra million in damages a little bit too much for the Hulkster? Brother, if you think so or you got an opinion on it, get in on that poll question. If you haven't already, please download the free WORL-FM-AM app. Take advantage of registering for the drawing for the $4,000 and take part in the poll question while you're there. Anyway, we'll be right back.
FM 105.5 at AM 660. The Answer. WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. The official radio station of Decision.
Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant. When I'm a road.
Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. Wish you could hear the banter between segments, but welcome back. Once again, 407-774-8255 is the number as you listen to the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. coming to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. And along with Colonel Danny McKnight and myself, Christopher Hart, we now are joined by Mike Bass. And Mike, of course, is Prime Quest Wealth Strategies. He's a sponsor of our show, but he's also a great co-host, very knowledgeable about tax issues. And, of course, he keeps up with all the other stuff, too, right?
I try to keep up with it, and our talk between segments is certainly not politically correct.
Anytime you're around McKnight, you're not going to have a whole lot of political correctness going on, right, Colonel?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure people will be glad that Mike's here because they probably heard all of me they wanted to for the first hour, let me tell you.
No. As a matter of fact, Nick told me a while back, and I assume it's the same way, that your... When you're on the show, those shows are some of the most re-listened to shows at our archive. So people can't get enough of you.
That's right. Danny and John Barros.
John Barros. That's right.
Yeah. He's
would
great.
Would y'all tell my wife that then,
please? We'll pass the message on.
We're never a prophet in our own home, are we?
That's right. Okay. One of the things that we were laughing about during the break is the colonel looked over and said, we were kind of talking a little bit about Obama in Cuba, and he said, don't you just wish he could just stay down there? And I pointed out to him that our poll question last night was, should Obama have gone to Cuba? Now, I came up with a question, but Nick came up with the answers, all right? It was yes, no, and then yes, and he should stay down there. And we had 100% consensus on that, didn't we, Nick?
Yes, we did.
Yes, keep him.
You can add Colonel McKnight to the list there. All right, so tonight's poll question has to do with the Hulkster, brother, and this huge damages he got on top of the original lawsuit. Got $115 million, and then they tacked on another $25 million, and I guess some legal costs, too. But the question was, again, Nick?
Yeah, so basically, do you agree with the jury's award of that extra $25 million in the Hogan lawsuit? And right now, 80% of the audience says no, and 20% are saying, yeah, I agree with that.
And that 20% are his family and friends who want a piece of the action. Who can blame him, right? All right. No pun intended there. All right. Thanks, Nick. And don't forget, at the end of the show, we will get the final results before we go off the air. And if you don't know how to participate in the poll question, it's real easy. You first have to have a smart device. Then you go to your app store and download the free WORL-FM-AM app. And then you can take advantage of the poll questions and other things that are going on via that app, and including the talkback feature. And you can also register for the Tax Day Bonus Sweepstakes. Somebody's going to win a sweet $4,000. And so please do register for that drawing. You can do it once a day between now and April the 15th. And if you don't have a smart device, you can also register for that drawing. You can't do the poll, but you can register for that drawing by going to am660theanswer.com. Okay. We've been talking about Belgium and some other things. The latest count is at least 31 dead. Over 200, it appears, are injured and wounded. And the death count probably will go up and include an American serviceman. And in my opinion, this was an attack not just on the people of Europe and Belgium in particular, but also on the United States, because where they actually conducted at least one of the explosions, not the subway explosions, but the one in the airport, because the bomb was detonated at the American Airlines check-in counter where people were checking in to catch a flight from Belgium back to the United States. And the serviceman, Colonel, you said was coming home with his family.
He and his family of five, and they all perished, yes. Wow. Yep. And so, like you're pointing out, which I totally agree with you, that wasn't by accident that it was him and his family. They knew that. You can look at us and tell. That's an American, probably an American soldier, because we do look a little different. Okay?
Right.
And here he is with his family. that was a target if I'd ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And Barack Obama spent all of about 51 seconds, evidently, this morning making his remarks concerning what had happened there. And that came about 10:30 after he finally dragged himself out, or is that drug? And he got himself out of bed, rolled out, and maybe had him a cigar while he was reading the reports or something. But in my opinion, I would like to have a commander-in-chief who would come out in an instance like this and say, this attack happened in Belgium, but I view this as an attack on the United States as well. And we are going to do something about it as just as though it had been conducted in Grand Central Station or LaGuardia or LAX or Chicago O'Hare. Americans were killed. They were attacking Americans. We're going to deal with this just like it happened in the on the mainland. That's what I would like to see in a commander-in-chief.
And if we do that, we may get the bad guys' attention, because when we say it, then go do it, and we might get their attention. We haven't got their attention yet. We haven't done anything that's really caused ISIS to change what they're doing. No. All they've done is move it.
They're still doubling down on the fact that this is not jihad. I mean, they said that today. The administration is still saying it's not jihad. How do you deal with an enemy that you never identify? I mean, you can't defeat an enemy that you don't identify.
Yep.
It's insane.
And you look at World War II, such a basic way to answer that question. Look at World War II. We identified very clearly who the bad people were that we had to go after, and we did that.
Right.
And we won. We got it done.
And not only that, but by the way, we would not allow Germans into the country, and we would not allow Japanese into the country until we got it all sorted out.
That's right.
Sound familiar?
Yes.
And this reaction by this administration, by the way, part of the reason that they say that they don't want to go down that road, like you're talking about, Mike, right, is that we're going to need allies. We're going to need the Saudi Arabians. We're going to need these other people to help us out in this fight. First of all, Colonel, I want to ask you, is that true? And second of all, where have they been so far?
I don't think we need them. I think if they're not going to support us, which they probably won't, but they will stay out of our way. They really will.
Right.
They really will. I believe they will stay out of the way, and we will do what needs to be done. And then they will, after it's done, then they will sort of say, okay, we're going to help now, which means they're going to say, okay, you've done all the work. You've made it safe for us. Now we'll try and just do our part now that you've done that. Yeah, they would not step up unless we step up first.
And nor will they take care of the problem themselves, because even if they're capable, they have their own political realities which will prevent them from doing what they need. For instance, the Saudi Arabians don't really want to crush the Islamic State because they have a lot of jihadis who live, guess where? In Saudi Arabia,
mm-hmm,
right? And then, of course, you get Iran and the Shia and all this Sunni Shia business involved. And so they don't want to destroy Islamic State because they got some jihadis in Saudi Arabia. Plus, the Islamic State is fighting Iran, who Saudi Arabia hates. So why would they want to crush an enemy, a force who is fighting their mortal enemy?
Mm-hmm.
It's the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So ISIS is, in fact, a friend of Saudi Arabia's. So why are they going to come and be an ally with us against ISIS? Ain't going to happen. Like you say, they'll stay out of our way. They might let us fly over their country or refuel or something. But they're not going to be in this, and there's no way, and you know what, that they are going to take care of this on their own. It's not going to happen. So forget about this. We got to be nice because we need them to be our allies.
Yeah, it doesn't work. And I mean, the easiest thing to do is cut off their lifeline, cut off the money. I mean, we allow them to fund this thing with huge amounts of dollars with the oil that exists, and it's just, I mean, it's such an easy thing to begin right there, to cut their money off, you know, to get rid of their resources. First thing they need to do.
Yep. And that's just part of it, though. It's got to be. That's part of a much broader plan.
Right.
All right, let's take some phone calls. Kathy is up first, then we'll get to Bob and John. Thank you all for calling. Kathy, thanks for being out there.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, I just want to say that Obama's been a disappointment from day one. This is just the way he is. Second of all, I would like to say that if there was a list of qualifications for president, Obama would be all the negatives of what you do not want in a president. Everything he is what you do not want in a president.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
He's a complete failure. He's a wimp. He's weak. He's a failure.
Yeah, and
he should have been out long time ago. And if I was involved in any of that, I would have had him impeached. And what does Hillary say? And Bernie Sanders? What are their views on the terrorists? I have yet to hear some of that stuff. But anyway, I just want to say that Obama is weak, he's pathetic, and he's a disgust.
I want to know how you really feel, Kathy.
I'm just so sick. I am so sick of him.
Well,
I got you.
He's so irresponsible, and he doesn't feel anything for the United States.
And
he does not love the United States. And how does Michelle now, how does she feel? Is she proud the first time in her adult life that her husband is a weak, pathetic person?
Well,
that's how I feel. That's exactly. And there's a lot of other people that feel exactly the way I do.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right on all accounts. Well, thank you
very much.
Thank you. And please do call back. We really appreciate it.
I'd rather have Kathy running our military than Obama.
Oh,
I like her.
That.
She's got guts.
That or
she's got a backbone.
She can come and sit on this stool and talk for me.
Absolutely. She does.
All right. Bob, let's take a break. Now, we're up against the break. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll go right back to the phone calls, and you can get in on the conversation, too. 407-774-8255. Christopher Hart, Mike Bass, and Colonel Danny McKnight coming to you live right now on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. That's our little ode to B.O., as it were, who's chilling out down in Cuba while all this mayhem is going on around the world, much of it due to his poor decision-making. All right, so let's get back to the phone lines. Bob is up next. Bob, thank you for calling tonight. Appreciate you being out there.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
A little bit of history. 1941, we got attacked.
Yep.
Country got into a war machine. And we went over to Europe and took on the biggest, baddest military army there was, called the Nazis. And in 4 years, we killed them till they were dead. And then at the same time, we went over to Japan attacked us. So we went over to the Pacific. And know what we did over there? We killed them till they were dead. And in 4 years, it was all over. For 15 years, we've been playing this silly, politically correct game of tag. And it's about time we go out there and kill them till they're dead and get this thing over with.
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. And part of the – I'm sorry, Bob. I'm looking at my notes as I'm talking to you here, because this morning on Fox Business Channel was a fellow by the name of Steve Rogers, and he is he's a former counterterrorism expert in the government. And now he's an advisor on Fox. And he said, most emphatically, we're in World War III. You know, and as I've said, and like you pointed out, 15 years since 9/11, that morning, I remember that morning. I remember because I was sitting there minding my own business, eating some oatmeal that morning, getting ready to go out and go do some work. And it happened. And when I talked to my mom, all she could say was, this reminds me of, this is like Pearl Harbor. Right? This is what it was like the day Pearl Harbor. And I remember telling people all that day, this is the start of World War III. You mark my words, this is the start of World War III. And the reason I said that was because it is encompassing countries all over the world. Everybody is involved, whether you want to be or not. And until we begin to see it that way, which is the way we saw it in 1941, we're not going to be able to do what you're talking about doing, Bob.
They just don't understand that this is a war. This is not a police action. This is not a game of tag.
No, and it's not even terrorism.
No.
Terrorism is the way they are conducting the war. We're not fighting against terrorism. We're fighting against people who are using that as a means to win the war.
Trump said something about killing kids there a couple of weeks ago, and everybody got on his case about it. How many kids died today? No, we're not in the uniform.
Well, he didn't say kids particularly. He said families. And what he's talking about is if people are going to aid and abet these people, they're not civilians anymore.
Yeah, right. No, they're terrorist kids. They're going to grow up to be terrorists.
Well, they're part of the problem, unfortunately.
Right.
And that's what we're seeing here in Belgium. Like the guy they captured the other day, he was being aided and abetted by a whole community of people over there. So all of them are implicated in this, you see? They knew what they were doing. They knew who they were harboring. And they knew why they were harboring him. So, yeah, until we stand up and say what Steve Rogers said this morning, we're not going to deal with it properly. Colonel?
I heard that, and I totally agree with what he said. This is not just some little passing thing. This is a war. It is a war, and we need to get involved in it. Sorry, but that's the way I feel.
As you said, go eyeball to eyeball with the enemy.
Yep.
All right, John is up next, and then there's another John, too. We'll get to you. But, John, thank you for calling.
Hey, fellas.
Hey, thanks for being out there tonight.
Hey, I was glad to have Terry McKnight on the program.
Yeah, Colonel Danny McKnight, yep.
Yeah. Now, Jay Johnson comes out with this policy statement about there's no ISIS people in the U.S. So why in the world are all the major cities mobilizing their immediate response teams?
Good question. Real quickly, what John is talking about, Jay Johnson, the head of the Department of Homeland Security, came out today to, you know, settle our fears that, no, this won't happen here. There are none of these refugee jihadis from ISIS here in the United States. This is after the United States announced that there is at least 50 to 100 more of these kind of people in Europe. So if they can't tell us how many there are in Europe, how can they tell us how many there are in the United States? It's ridiculous, John. You're right to point that out.
You were talking about collateral damage earlier.
Yes.
Well, this delinquent president...
That's a good way to put
so
it.
...so tardy to get to the game here.
Yeah.
I was watching a program. CBN had a special about what's been going on in Sinjar. And basically, ISIS has totally eradicated this town of Sinjar, which I think they said had about 100,000 people, and there's nothing there. It's just rubble.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, they have caravans that are shipping anything of value out of Mosul and taking it back to Syria because they know that they will come under attack. And basically, they have this scorched earth program, and they're just going to level Mosul.
Yeah, basically, they're sort of, in a way, I guess you might say, and I don't want to insult anybody from the Norwegian area, but they're sort of the old Vikings of old, where they rape, rob, and pillage, and then they move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look at Mosul, they'll come back, it'll still be there, but in the meantime, they'll move on and carry their mayhem with them and the loot and all of that as well. So you're absolutely right, John.
Yeah, this president, I wonder in his conscience, if he has any, carries the weight of all those innocent people that have been killed over there because failure to actually respond to this whole situation years ago.
Yeah, I think you're right. I saw Colonel Danny McKnight shaking his head when you asked that question, figuratively, hypothetically. I don't think he feels bad about any of this.
I don't think it's affected his conscience at all, you know, zero. I mean, there's too many things that's in our own country that's happened, and he hasn't shown any real concern, conscience for them. So why would he dare? Although he may worry about somebody that's, you know, a Muslim or something more than he would one of us, you know. I don't know.
Well, I think his whole mentality is that he believes that we're the fault of most of this anyway.
Right.
So it's not the fact that he feels sorry for them. He feels sorry You feel sorry for them because they are the victims in his mind. It's a crazy thing.
I know, and you can tie that into the comments that he's been making down there in Cuba.
Exactly.
Apologizing for us down there in Cuba.
Again.
Bringing up the slave trade. I mean, this is ridiculous. And no, he does. In his mind, yeah, some people got killed over there in Belgium, but it'd be worse if I did what they want us to do, what they want me to do. See, this is how juvenile his delinquent, as John put it, his mind is working. Hey, John, thank you for calling tonight. I really appreciate you being out there. I got time for one more call in this segment. Don, you are up next, sir. Thank you for calling tonight.
I would like to ask Colonel McKnight, what is the difference in price between a bomb that we would have dropped in World War II from 30,000 feet that won that war versus the smart bombs that we're using and the drones that it takes? How much does it cost for a drone and a smart bomb that we fly inside a window and kill one guy with? What's the difference in price?
Well, the difference in price is probably an enormous price in terms of financially. But
yeah,
the price that we pay by not doing it is greater harm to us than anything, in all honesty. That's the way I look at that, Don. We did do the right thing, like you said, when we dropped a bomb from 30,000 feet and changed the world, and we won that war. We need to do the same kind of thing, but we can do it much, much better than we did then. But we don't have somebody that has the will to do that now. We had the will in the 40s, and that's the reason we won, and that's the reason we're the country we are today. But we have lost that, and we have lost the will because that person does not wear big boy pants to make that decision.
No, I think he will. All right, feel like you're on a crazy train? We'll help you get off and get on the sane path. You're listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show. Christopher Hart, Colonel Danny McKnight, Mike Bass in the studio with you. 407-774-8255 is the number. Let's get right back to the phone lines. John has been waiting. John, thank you for calling and waiting tonight.
Hey, Chris. Hey, Colonel.
How you doing, John?
Pretty good. RA 72 to 76. What I want in a commander in chief is like the officers I was around when I was in the military. Say what they mean what they say, and they say it one time. Whether you're a subordinate or the enemy, there's a consequence to be paid. And as far as that collateral damage goes, if they were in a sandpan or if they were a farmer with a water buffalo, if they had an AK-47, you had no choice. You had to do what you had to do. You got to treat the enemy like it's the enemy. America's got to be let go. Let this military do what it knows how to do.
Colonel?
You're right. And, you know, you say in the word enemy, have you heard the commander-in-chief in almost, now coming up on 8 years, thank God it's coming to an end, but have you heard him ever use that word? The
no,
enemy? Me neither, see, because he won't do that, because he doesn't, for one thing, know how to identify the enemy and go after him. And therefore, he just has never used that word. He has not. Did you ever hear Ronald Reagan or the Bushes when they were president? Did you ever hear them use the word enemy? You bet your butt you did. Because, like you said, that's what they are, and that's what we have to do is eliminate the enemy. So you are right on the money.
Not only that, but in order to do that, we've got to do something about the rules of engagement, right?
Yeah, we play with the rules of engagement.
I mean, because like what John's talking about, if you see someone with an AK-47, you got to assume if they're on the battlefield that they're up to no good. You can't
wear uniforms,
right? You can't wait until they shoot at you necessarily, right?
That's exactly right. Been there, done that, and I understand it, and so I'm sure John does too. Exactly.
There's another word that's not being used, and that's the word win.
Yeah.
I mean,
victory,
there's no commitment to win anything here.
No, we're going to degrade and destroy.
Okay. And contain.
And contain, whatever those things mean, right?
Right.
As we're leading from behind.
How does the military operate not knowing how to win? I mean, not knowing that the goal is to win. I don't know how you do that.
And when we see the uses of drones like they are now, I understand they can be helpful. You cannot win the war. You can't even win a battle with the drone. It just is not going to happen. You win the war. You win the battle when you're eyeball to eyeball with the bad guy. He dies and you don't. You win. That's the bottom line.
And they're constantly talking and criticizing Trump and others for providing the terrorists with recruiting tools. You want to know what one of the biggest recruiting tools that they use is?
The drone.
No, well, that too, yeah. But the drone program. Because, see, it's they see it as a cowardly way to fight. Right?
Very true.
You're fighting with this thing in the sky that nobody can see it, and it's not an honorable way to fight, so to speak. And so for a superpower to fight that way, it makes it look like we're too afraid to fight them on the battlefield. That is a recruiting tool, ladies and gentlemen. That's what you call a recruiting tool.
And that is exactly the impression the commander-in-chief has given to the world. We are afraid to fight them on the battlefield. That's exactly what he has done. He has created that. Therefore, the enemy feels very comfortable attacking because they know we're not going to fight them on the battlefield.
We're not going to show up.
And I hope people out there don't think I'm a warmonger by any means, but I'm not. I hate it if we lose one soldier. But I am tired of them being a winner right now. We're the losers right now. And that's not acceptable in the United States of America. Come on.
No, sir. And, they are the enemy.
And it's because, once again, of the president's disastrous decision to take our troops out of Iraq that's got us into a big part of this problem. And then, of course, the mistakes they made in Libya, where they go in there, they depose. They basically took a sovereign government. Now, you can say what you want about the government, but it was a sovereign government. They went in there, they destroyed the government and the institutions, and then we walked away and expected it somehow to go, you know, all go work out in the end, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Hey, Chris?
Yeah.
Have you heard line by Hillary that the yesterday she said the commander in chief needs a steady hand. Well, where was her steady hand when it came time for her to pick up that phone in Benghazi?
Don't get me going now.
I want to know.
You don't get me going.
Doesn't ask her that.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, steady hand. Last thing she knows anything about.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you, John.
Thanks, John. You take care.
Yeah, appreciate you being out there. But yeah, this situation that we are in over there, that the world is in, is a you can go right back to the White House and this administration and the bad decisions that they have made over the last number of years. And guess who was right in the middle of it? Was old Ms. Clinton there, old Hillary, he was just talking about, the Secretary of State.
Now,
I'll say this about Obama. At least he didn't want to do what we did in Libya. He was right about Libya. He thought that it would be disastrous if we went in there and took out Gaddafi. I don't know if you remember, but he was reluctant. It was Cheryl Mills, Susan Rice, and Hillary Clinton that talked him into it. All right, it was the three powerful women in his organization, his administration.
You called them women, huh? Wow. You're a brave man.
Well, they called Caitlin a woman, so
yeah, that's true.
It's all the same,
yeah,
right?
That's right. Yeah.
But the bottom line is he knew, he didn't want to do any follow through. And he knew that if there was not going to be a follow-through, it probably wasn't going to turn out very well. He was right about that. Unfortunately, he broke weak.
Yes.
You know, when he was right on a decision, he couldn't stand strong on it. And as a result, we ended up with a situation, and ISIS is now in Libya, yeah. And we have the Benghazi and four dead Americans. Mm-hmm. None of that would have ever happened. Gaddafi might very well still be there, and Northern Africa be a lot more settled than it is now.
Yeah, it's not the kind of country we want, but he had it under control. Because he did become very fearful when Ronald Reagan dropped that bomb in his living room that day.
And
you know?
when Debbie had invaded Iraq.
That's right. And see, the same thing with Egypt. You know, Obama supports the overthrow of Egypt. And where is it now compared to where it was?
Well,
it's changed.
Yeah, well, thank God the General Assisi over there took control and saved that country, or it would be Assyria right now. You mark my words, yeah, it would be Assyria.
It had to be a military guy, though, that made the change over there because the Muslim Brotherhood first took it over when Obama did what he wanted to do. And like you said, had the general not done it, they would be another country that's dead on their butt.
They would be in an all-out civil war.
Yes.
Yep. And you would have refugees flocking out of Egypt.
Yep.
It's amazing that Obama is such an anti-imperialistic man. And what does he do? He goes in and overthrows Egypt. I mean,
yeah, right. Exactly.
Egypt, Libya.
Libya. I mean,
wanted to overthrow
him in Syria. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing.
All right. Let's go back to the phone lines. Al is on the line. Al, thank you for calling tonight. Is Al still with us?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, sir. Thank you for calling.
All right, I got a question.
Yes.
So, since Trump says he's going to destroy ISIS, are we going to bet on that if he gets elected in his two terms, all right, so 8 years, he'll completely destroy ISIS?
Well, let's just say I believe he'd probably get about 99% of them. I don't know if you could ever destroy all of them because we don't know where they are. Here's part of the problem is
the part of the problem is
the longer we wait to deal with it, still yet the harder it's going to be, because even though they've already spread, they will spread even more. And if you can get 90, 95%, 99% of them, that other 1% may just change their mind and go away. But the point is, we got to approach this because they are not going to go away until we deal with the problem as it is being delivered onto our doorstep. This is being dropped in our laps. This is not something we want to do, but it has to be dealt with. And what Trump is all about is he's America number one, U.S. number one. We're going to protect America. And to protect America, we got to defeat ISIS. We got to close the border. We got to ban Muslims from coming into this country, at least for a time, which, by the way, more and more people are beginning to say. So I understand what you're saying, but Colonel,
I believe there is no question in my mind we have got to defeat them. We do not have to kill 100% of them. We have to defeat them. You can defeat them by probably taking out 75% of them. Because like Chris said, when you take out that many of them, the others are going to say, boy, this is not what we need to do anymore.
This ain't working out for me.
And that's really what you do.
Yeah.
So you don't have to say we're going to take all of them out. But the problem is we should have taken most of them out already, and we wouldn't be looking at what we're looking at right now with ISIS. But we didn't do it, and we should have been the leader. I'm sorry, but we should have been the leader to get it done. We did not, and I promise you what we've seen in Brussels, we're still going to see even bigger in the United States of America if we don't fight now, and I don't think we have the people willing to do that.
All right, Al.
Well,
go ahead. Right. Go ahead. You want to say something else?
Well, I just don't see it happening. I mean, the only way you eradicate them is if you kill the man, woman, and child, and that's not going to happen. So they're going to linger forever. You can't just kill off 75% and then think that the other 25% is going to be like, oh, forget about it. We're not going to deal with it. That's just not going to happen at all. So good luck.
Well, but that doesn't mean we can't deal with the problem. But Al actually does have a point, and the point is that this isn't just the Islamic State. This isn't just al-Shabaab or all the other ones. When you get right down to it, the problem is Islam. The problem is Islam. And until we recognize that, the powers that be will not deal with that in the way that it needs to be dealt with. So, in a sense, Al is correct. We could defeat the Islamic State, but there will come along another, you know, Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab, or some other name they'll come up with. But their fundamental principles, their fundamental inspiration, their fundamental reason for being will be the Quran.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, this is about going back to identify the enemy. The enemy is Islam. That's exactly what Muslim. This is not a religion. It is a political movement, and it's masked as a religion. Now, there's some people that follow some tenets of religion that call themselves Muslim. I get that. But this is a political movement. And until we come to grips with that and fight this battle, we're not going to deal with this. That's right.
It is a form of imperialism.
It is.
Like the Japanese, right?
And
we're in World War the 30s and 40s.
And about 10 years ago, we didn't even think that was an issue, did we? But in the last 8 years, under the current president in our country, it has had the perfect field to grow because he has allowed it to happen.
All right. Thanks, Al. Appreciate your call. That was actually a very excellent point that you made there. Needed to be brought out. Appreciate you doing that, helping us do that. All right, we got to take another break, but before we do, folks, if you are an employer, a small business person, and you have 10 employees or more, please come to the Bring Small Businesses Back tour. You really need to be a part of this. This is all about creating more business and more jobs and more just economic rebound, if you will. This is being sponsored by the Jobs Creators Network, and it will be hosted by our very own Mike Gallagher. Of course, you listen to him along with me every Monday through Friday morning, 9 to noon. And Mike Gallagher and, of course, the nationally known pollster, Frank Luntz will be there as well. And Alfredo Ortiz, who's the chief executive officer of Job Creators Network. This is free. It's going to be right up the street here at the Hilton Orlando, which is actually here in Altamont Springs. It's April the 7th. That's 2 weeks from Thursday. The doors open at 6 p.m. And all you have to do to get your tickets is go to am660theanswer.com, or if you have downloaded the free WORLFMAM app into your smart device, you can get them that way as well. They are free, but seating is limited, so please get your tickets now to the Bring Small Businesses Back tour. Once again, this is being brought to you by FM 105.5 and AM660 The Answer and the Job Creators Network, so please do take advantage of it. Don't miss this opportunity, and we will be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. Thank you for being out there tonight. Once again, Colonel Danny McKnight is in the studio with us. He'll be back next month. In the meantime, though, if you have not gotten a copy of his book, Streets of Mogadishu, I highly recommend it. It's an excellent book. Every young person in your life should read this book, should have a copy that they can carry with them the rest of their lives, because it's all about leadership, recognizing leadership, how to be a leader, how to recognize a leader. And you can get his book, Streets of Mogadishu, by going to his website, DannyMcKnight.com. That's DannyMcKnight.com. And if you fill out the paperwork there, so to speak, he will autograph that thing for you as well. All right, Danny's in the studio with us, the Colonel is, and Mike Bass is also in the studio with us this afternoon, and we got time for one more phone call, and Robert is up next. Robert, thank you for calling tonight.
Absolutely, sir. How are y'all doing this evening?
Excellent. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, not a problem. I just wanted to bring up the fact that, you know, Obama traded for Bergdahl. You know, Patton would have shot him for going AWOL.
Yeah.
He may still get that.
Yeah, go ahead. You're right about that, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah, he was the last general to shoot somebody for going AWOL. And guess what? We didn't have a problem with soldiers going AWOL then.
Yeah, well, you know, something that came out this past week, though, about Bergdahl, evidently he tried to get in the Army once and they wouldn't let him in because he wouldn't pass the psychological exam. I guess he went and tried to join the Coast Guard or something and ended up coming back, and then the Army gave him a pass and let him in.
Yeah, that's what the Obama's doing with all the waivers they were doing.
Yeah, no doubt.
I saw some soldiers that had no reason being out on the field. And then we had one guy who lost 200 pounds due to a lap band surgery, so he could enlist.
Oh, wow.
But the point I wanted to make is, you know, we traded how much plus three terrorists for this guy, which gave them several billion dollars. And then they have the phone scams going on. And this is one thing that, you know, you hear on the news, the IRS phone scam, but what they're not telling you behind it, it's actually ISIS doing that phone scam, as well as a few other ones saying you owe $60,000 for the IRS. And people are actually paying this money.
Yeah.
They owe money.
Yeah, these scams are going on all the time. As a matter of fact, local Congressman John Micah has been trying to warn people about these scams, whoever's perpetrating them, for people to be on the lookout for them. But certainly, these people, this enemy, is going to use every tactic that they can figure out how to use to make our lives miserable, and in their minds, ultimately to defeat us. Because, see, they're not trying to degrade or contain or destroy us. They're trying to defeat us. Yeah. Hey, Robert, I'm about out of time, though. I got to let you go. But thank you for calling tonight. We appreciate you, and call back. All right.
Just so people understand, I know you know this. The IRS is never going to call you and ask you to send money. That's not the way they operate.
No.
They put you on notice. They send certified letters. You get your bank account, but they don't call you on the phone. That is not the IRS doing that.
No,
they never do that.
That's not their MO.
No.
Yeah, but a lot of people get scammed that way.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I wouldn't put it past these ISIS people to be doing things like that. And once again, they're in this for keeps. They're not messing around. And as the colonel said, you know, if they can't win today, they'll win tomorrow. There's a saying that I've said on the show a number of times that they have over there. We have the watches. They have the time. In other words, to them, there's no time. It's a Western concept. There just is. And they will be here later on, just as they are now, in their mind. And until we change that reality, they will continue to be our enemy.
Yeah. And you know, I don't think we'll ever, and I hope I've never let anybody think this, that we'll defeat all of them. You're not going to defeat all of them, but what you have to do is defeat them well enough that they understand, don't mess with us. We haven't shown that to them yet. We have yet to scare one of them.
Yeah, indeed. All right, let's find out the final results of our today's poll question. Nick, please tell us again, what was the question, the answers, and the results?
All right, today's question was, do you agree with the jury's award of $25 million in damages above the $115 million already awarded to Hulk Hogan in his recent lawsuit? And things came back a little bit more towards yes as we went on in the show, but not quite enough to win. 33% of the respondents said yes, and 66 said no.
Oh, brother. All right. Thank you, Nick. And don't forget, there'll be a brand new poll question up tomorrow. So please, once again, if you have not, download the free WORL-FM-AM app into your smart device. And don't forget to register, and you can do it once a day, but every day until April the 15th for the tax bonus sweepstakes, tax day bonus sweepstakes. Somebody's going to take home a sweet, sweet $4,000. And then what you do, you call Mike Bass, and he will tell you how to hang on to that $4,000 and actually make it a lot more, right, Mike?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, that's Mike Bass of Prime Wealth, Prime Quest Wealth Strategies. All right, and Colonel, thank you once again for being here tonight.
My pleasure, my pleasure. I'll ask you one question that you have to answer, though.
What's that?
Do you think that Cuba will be our friend 5 years from now?
Nope.
Thank you.
All right, but they probably are going to have Guantanamo Bay.
Probably right.
All right. Thank you, guys, and thank you all, folks. Night, everybody.
FM 105.5 at AM 660. The Answer. WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. The official radio station of Decision.
There's Pampers. Thank you, Don. Thanks for being out there.